The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day. Oral questions put by members. The time is now 3:14. We'll go to 4:44. And I again just remind members that no electronic devices are to be turned on during the question period. We'll recognize the leader of the official opposition.
Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday we got an idea how this government calculates interest. When asked how much Nova Scotians will pay for borrowing $278 million, the government insisted it was free. We all know this is not true, Mr. Speaker. But in the interest of informing all Nova Scotians how much this latest shell game will cost, my question to the Premier is, how much of the $278 million will end up on the debt of the province?
The Honourable the Premier.
All of the deficit of the province in each year, of course, becomes the debt in the following year. I'm sure the Leader of the Opposition understands that.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the government is well aware Nova Scotians are paying a price for borrowing money it doesn't have. In fact, this decision by government to prepay a bill that isn't due until next year will cost Nova Scotians millions and millions more in debt servicing charges into the future. So my question to the Premier is, what is the true cost of interest payments for this $278 million and the true cost of servicing the debt?
The Honourable the Premier.
I would like to thank the Leader of the Opposition for his question. As he knows, the budget will be delivered on Thursday. All of the information with respect to debt servicing costs and borrowing will all be contained in the budget. And on Thursday, he'll have an opportunity to get an answer to his question.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier may not want to tell Nova Scotians the full cost of this bad decision. They don't want to tell Nova Scotians they are increasing the deficit and the debt. But we have no problem telling Nova Scotians what this government is up to. This government decided to borrow more than $200 for every man, woman, and child in Nova Scotia for a political gain. The cost of borrowing that money is millions of dollars, money that could have gone to early learning, daycare spaces, or dealing with children living in poverty. So my question to the Premier is, why did you choose your own political well-being over the well-being of our children?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had the opportunity yesterday to explain to the Leader of the Opposition why he was wrong in his calculation. But suppose for a second that he believes it, I can only ask him why he voted for budgets that prepaid MOUs year after year.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. On September 4th, Nova Scotia Community College faculty voted unanimously to conduct an electronic province-wide vote in favor of strike action. Yesterday, they voted over 90% in favor of strike. Community college teachers are only looking for the same salary increases and improvements to medical benefits that public school teachers, members of the same union, have already received. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Why would you treat community college teachers any different than public school teachers?
Good question. You're here.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party for her question. As she knows, there are labor negotiations that are ongoing at this point in time. Part of the commitment that we have as a government is a commitment to the collective bargaining process. These things are going to be discussed at the table, and that's where they should be discussed.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Premier, your Minister of Education, when questioned as recently as 1:50 today, was unable to provide any answers regarding a contingency plan to deal with this potential strike. As required, the workers will give the Minister 48 hours' notice of their intention, but they could walk within days. My question to the Premier is this. Are you prepared to guarantee the thousands of community college students across Nova Scotia today that they will not have to worry about classes being shut down, their education being interrupted in the coming weeks due to a teacher's strike?
The Honourable the Premier.
What I am prepared to guarantee, not just the people of the province, the students, and the members opposite, is that we are going to respect the collective bargaining process. There's one underway. The parties have advanced the positions at the table. Those negotiations will continue to go on. I have faith that reasonable people will come to a reasonable conclusion. Thank you.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservatives on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, NSGEU President Joan Jessam has already served notice to this government that in spite of the union support for their party, she has no plans to negotiate backwards. If negotiations break down, and if community college classes close, and if students' studies are interrupted, how long is this government prepared to let those classrooms be closed, to let that student studies be interrupted before considering back-to-work legislation?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to reiterate for the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party that we have every faith in a collective bargaining process which has stood this province in good faith for many, many years. The reality is that by far the vast majority of collective agreements in this province are negotiated and are concluded, based on the goodwill of the parties who are involved. I have all the respect that I can have for the community college teachers. They provide a very valuable service in our province. They acquit themselves with great alacrity and they don't want to hear me, Mr. Speaker. What I'm trying to say is that we appreciate the work that's done by the members of that union, and we're going to have let the process go on through to its conclusion.
The Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia. Gas regulation costs Nova Scotians millions of dollars a year. This hurts everyone. It also hurts gas dealers on the border with New Brunswick. Gas regulation is a bad idea, and this government's proposal is proposing to make it worse by artificially moving a taxation border. So my question to the Minister is, how is this fair for all Nova Scotians?
The Honourable the Premier.
I know the Leader of the Opposition directed this to the Minister, but I wanted to...
Order, please. Order. Order.
I'm going to allow.
Order, please. Order. The Premier has the right to answer questions on behalf of his minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to assure the Leader of the Opposition that this is an endeavor, this is an initiative for the government to put forward to the Utility and Review Board this plan for the recognition of the competitive disadvantages for business people who are on the border. And furthermore, Mr. Speaker, I want to assure the Leader of the Opposition that there are many zones in this province already that show differences in price across the province. There are many already, the member asked, and I'm just trying to answer the question. Now, if they don't want to hear me,
okay.
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My supplementary is to the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, plain and simple, this is a bad idea and it is unfair. So why does this minister and this government want to continue to pit one community against another in our own province?
The Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you for the question. I am very strongly in favour of gas regulation for Nova Scotians, and I personally feel it is very good for Nova Scotia. The Utility and Review Board will be taking over the mandate for gas pricing as of October 1st. And part of that mandate, they will be looking at the border tax issue, the border tax at that time. There will be public hearings starting in the new year. And the Utility and Review Board will be an open and transparent process, and with the Utility and Review Board having these hearings starting in the new year, there will be a consumer advocate on that committee at the same time. So we will be looking at the recommendations by the Utility and Review Board.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we believe in tax fairness for all Nova Scotians. Creating an artificial border in...
Order, order. I recognize the members. I'd ask you to please be respectful of other members when they're up speaking. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we believe in tax fairness for all Nova Scotians. Creating an artificial border inside the province does exactly the opposite. Why do the people of Inverness deserve to pay more tax on their gas than those who live in Spring Hill? Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is, why do the people of King's South deserve to pay more tax on their gas than the people of King's North?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you. I welcome that question so that I can clarify that already in the province of Nova Scotia we have six zones, and that's based on transportation. So the people of King's North and King's South are already in a zone together. I just want to repeat that as of October 1st, the Utility and Reviewer Board have the mandate to move forward on having the public hearings around the Amherst tax, the border tax. So as of October 1st, it will be in the hands of the Utility and Review Board, and we all, Nova Scotians, have great faith in the work that they do. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Mr. Speaker, visitors Mr. Speaker, visitors to the World Trade and Convention Center have injected an average of $100 million into the provincial economy every year for the past 10 years. However, groups are starting to look elsewhere because the present facility cannot service their needs. Work has already begun, Mr. Speaker, on the development of a new World Trade Convention Center. However, we are still waiting for the NDP government to commit to this project. Every day we wait is another opportunity lost. In this challenging economic climate, we cannot afford to wait for this type of strategic stimulus of this project will provide to Nova Scotia. My question is, on what date will the minister announce the government's support of this new development?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the question, I thank the member opposite for the question. It's unfortunate that he didn't come and speak with me personally. But as far as the... as far as the World Trade and Convention Center is concerned, Mr. Speaker, due process will be followed. We will be doing due diligence, and we will announce things when the time's appropriate.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the NDP has been very firm on their opposition to private-public partnerships in the past. In fact, the Premier said that you have to tread very, very lightly on getting into these kinds of messes again. Mr. Speaker, the development of the new World Trade and Convention Center is a P3 project. All bidding was based on being a P3 project, and the tenders went out as a P3 project. My question is the NDP government intentionally holding up this project because it is a P3 initiative?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the answer to the question is no.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the President of CUPE, Nova Scotia, has called for the Premier to abandon three P3 projects. The Premier has said bluntly that P3s are not a model for Nova Scotia. So is either the Minister telling us the truth or the Premier telling us the truth? Mr. Speaker, my final question is to the Minister. Is the new World Trade and Convention Center in danger because of this government is under the influence of unions?
The Honourable Minister of Rural and Economic Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I composed myself here. I'm not sure if I understood the question. The question seems like if we're under the influence of unions, and the obvious answer to the question is no.
Thank you. The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Capital District Health Authority will be hiring a company to reprocess medical equipment previously designed for one use only. Will the Premier explain the rationale behind this decision?
Good question.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd certainly like to thank the Leader of the Conservative Party for the question. The district health authorities, of course, have control over their own budgets. They make these decisions based on what they think is both in the best interests of their patients and in the best interests of the district health authority as a whole. So they're making that decision, understanding all of the their ramifications. And quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, I have faith in their judgment in that regard.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, one Halifax cardiologist has said, and I quote, an ultrasound catheter is an example of equipment that could be used more than once because it has, quote, least chance of reinfection. The words least chance of reinfection are disconcerting. Is the Premier prepared to accept full liability should anything happen to any patient at Capital Health as a result of this practice?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sure the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party understands that these matters are reviewed by the medical staff. They are reviewed with the district health authorities. They rely on medical expertise when they make their decisions. And as I said, I'm certainly not a physician. I rely on their advice, as I'm sure the leader did when she was responsible for the ministry. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am very well aware of the role and responsibility of the government. The risk of this practice is too great. A saving of $150,000 pales in comparison to the life of a Nova Scotian. Any comments regarding liability insurance, if anything should happen to a patient, do not instill much confidence in patients at Capital Health. So to the Premier, will the Premier stand in his place today and agree to put a stop to this practice before it begins?
Absolutely.
And thus ensure that the health of hundreds, indeed thousands, of Nova Scotians will not be put in jeopardy? Mr. Premier, you know, and Nova Scotians know, the buck stops with you.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's an example of a question that was written before the answer was heard. I didn't mention liability insurance. What I mentioned was the expertise, the medical expertise of the District Health Authority. It's their responsibility. They, of course, make these judgments based on the sound expertise of their staff, and, of course, we rely on them.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. One of the first programs that disappeared from the Department of Health website when this government was elected was the Caregiver Allowance Program. For 2 months, people across the province waited to find out what the government's plans were for that program, when they could apply or what the eligibility might be necessary to qualify. 2 months of waiting were, I guess, rewarded in August when there was a press release that really purported to be a good news story that the program was in place and people could apply for it. You know, it encouraged people who are caregivers, who are spending a lot of time keeping their loved ones in their own home, to apply for some financial assistance. My question to the minister is, can she inform the House now how many people have applied? And more importantly, how many have qualified for the Caregiver Allowance Program to date? And if she doesn't have the answer right now, could she provide it by the end of today at the House?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for her question. Mr. Speaker, as people in this House know, this government is very committed to keeping seniors in their homes and in their communities for as long as they want and can be there. And we value the work of caregivers. The caregiver program that the member refers to is a program of the former government, designed by the former government with the encouragement, I would say, the enthusiasm of the Liberal Party, who spoke many times in this House about the importance of having that program. And we were very pleased to be able to fulfill the commitment of the former government by implementing that program. However, this party in the election campaign had campaigned on a caregivers program of our own, and we're looking forward to learn some lessons from the current program as we design and go forward to fulfill our election promise expected next year, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Minister says that they've gone ahead with this program even though it's not their own. It was entirely within her hands to change that program now. So in her own press release that came out August 11th, it says that the Minister herself says that caregivers need support themselves so that they can continue to provide care for their family and friends. I think that's pretty clear that there's support from the government to have gone forward with this. But, Mr. Speaker, it has not gone forward well, and what appears to be a good news story is, in fact, not a good news story. Many caregivers are contacting their MLAs and telling us that they do not score a 5 out of 5 on the MAPLE scale, which means the method of assigning priority levels. It's not enough to qualify if you are a 3, and there's many people that are in dire straits that are not coming near the 5. Mr. Speaker, every day, with every assessment, there are a growing number of disappointed and frustrated caregivers whose expectations and whose hopes were dashed by this very program. They're seeing the emptiness of what's being available to them.
You have a question,
and my
member?
Question to the minister, thank you, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister again is, during the 2 months that you were reviewing the caregiver allowance program, what adjustments did you make to create this situation where virtually every applicant is being denied assistance?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, surely the Honourable Member isn't suggesting that this government shouldn't have implemented the caregivers program that we announced in August. I think the people who have applied and who have qualified would find that a very tough pill to swallow, Mr. Speaker, particularly since members of her own caucus were calling my department every day asking when that program was coming, Mr. Speaker.
The member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, without a doubt, there's a demand for a program like this that helps to keep people out of institutions. And I make no apology for asking that be in place. But, Mr. Speaker, what is the point of announcing programs where there's expectations, where it sounds great, where television programs or news programs touted how wonderful it would be, and then deny so many people that have tremendous needs? You have to be accountable for the program that you've brought in this 100 days of your government and take responsibility. I hear a lot of talk about accountability, and that's what it is. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister would be, has the minister put a restriction on the number of approved applicants? And is that to cut costs, or are you simply trying to make the program more of a failure so that you can bring your own one in later?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the program announced by the former government was a program that was designed to help over 700 people who needed care. We have not changed one iota in that program in terms of who will receive the care. We still have the same target. We still have the same amount of money budgeted, Mr. Speaker. Now, with respect to any difficulties that people may have with respect to qualifying, we are currently reviewing the criteria for that program, and we are doing that with a view to designing a program that will be more effective, which was a commitment of this government in the election campaign in June, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question, Mr. Speaker, through you is to the Minister of Health. The Caregiver Allowance was a program designed to help seniors stay in their homes longer, providing their caregivers with $400 And by the way, the NDP proposed $500. So there's not a lot of difference between what the government brought forward when we were there or what they proposed when they were running for office. As you know, many people give up their lives or jobs to take care of friends and loved ones. And by doing so, they save the province money by keeping these family members out of hospital or long-term care facilities. It was our intention when we were government to award caregivers with these dollars to acknowledge, for the acknowledgement for their selflessness in keeping their loved ones at home. Can you, Minister, update the House on the criteria of the uptake of the now NDP adjusted program?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. The criteria for this program remain the same criteria that the former government had in place when they had a pilot project in two parts of the province, with one small difference, Mr. Speaker. The pilot project required that the person receiving the care had to already be on a wait list for long-term care. This program that was announced in August removed that particular criteria, and in fact, Mr. Speaker, would make it easier for people to qualify for the caregivers program. So that was the one adjustment that we were able to make, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyll on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our program was province-wide. It wasn't a pilot, and it was going to help as many people as we possibly could. 87-year-old Jean Cutrow and her son and caregiver Peter applied for the program some weeks ago. Jean suffered a stroke 3 years ago, has limited use of her left side, has trouble standing any length of time, and uses a wheelchair when attending doctor appointments. Peter must help her up and down, does a wonderful job of keeping her diabetes in check by regular blood checks and, of course, adjusting her food intake accordingly to keep her well. Mr. Speaker, does the Minister of Health think that Jean should be qualifying for the caregiver allowance?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I won't speak to any specific case here in the legislature. However, what I will say...
I'll recognize the Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are five criteria, essentially, to qualify for the caregiver's allowance. The person receiving care and the person giving care must be 19 years of age or over. There is an income test for the care receiver. This is a targeted program at very low-income people, Mr. Speaker. And the person receiving the care has to get 20 hours of care a week from the person who's providing care. And the last item is that there is a home, there is a continuing care assessment, Mr. Speaker. It is the same assessment that is used for home care, for long-term care, and the person has to be what is called a Maple 5 on the assessment tool, which is the highest level of care that is required. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyll on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Of course, they don't qualify, and they want answers. And I'll table a letter that I've received from Peter for the minister to look into this file, but I'll read a sentence or two out of it. I applied for the caregiver program, and they sent someone over and asked a few questions and got turned down. I thought they would send someone to see how little my mother could do. It's a 24-hour job that Peter has to take care of his mother because of her infirmity. So I'm going to table that, and will the minister commit today in helping the Cutrows qualify for this program or change some of the criteria in order for her to qualify for this program? So what we're finding out, and from the questions already we've had today, that there are a lot of people that are not qualifying for this program that is so needed by Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I'd like to say to the Honourable Member through you that we certainly are willing to look at any of the concerns that members of the opposition bring forward when they feel that someone has been wrongly assessed, Mr. Speaker, and we will review the situation. And, Mr. Speaker, I would also like to say, though, that the employees of the department and now of the DHAs who do these home care assessments are very compassionate and very skilled people in the process of doing the assessments. And I think we need to acknowledge that they have a difficult job at times to do, but they do it very well, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, as the House is aware, the Minister tabled a petition yesterday by two residents from Dartmouth East asking for changes to crosswalk legislation. Now, he's also aware that the Waverley Road crosswalk trial program was discontinued on July 31st at the request of the Halifax Regional Municipality. And one of the reasons given by the Transportation Association of Canada was that no Canadian province has yet adopted crosswalk flags as a traffic control device. So my question for the Minister is he prepared to authorize municipalities in Nova Scotia to use crosswalk flags as a traffic control device, and what specific actions is his government taking to improve visibility at crosswalks?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite for the question. I'm aware of the fact, of course, this constituent of the new member has been in touch with me a number of times. I've spoken to Norm Collins about his wonderful initiative, and I've made it very clear an HRM issue should be settled within the HRM. That was the initial response I had as the minister at the time. I'm also aware of the fact that I did say, and I did encourage people in my community, Transportation Department is responsible for provincial highways. There are a number of crosswalks where people show the initiative, as Mr. Collins has done, and is willing to look at crosswalk flags for streets or roads that are responsible to the Department of Transportation, and as the MLA for Timberley Prospect, that would be something that I would support. I encourage the member from Dartmouth East, if he wishes, at his convenience, to bring Mr. Collins to my office and we could talk further about it. But I'm always firmly of the belief, and this councillor in his past life wouldn't be aware of the fact, I've heard councillors from the HRM say many times, we are a child of the province. My response would be, it's time to grow up and handle your own problems.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my goodness, the minister must certainly be aware of the letter then that was sent to his copy to his office by Mayor Peter Kelly asking the minister to make changes to the legislation, because current legislation does not allow the municipality, or any municipality for that matter in Nova Scotia, to consider traffic control devices. Mr. Speaker, and I'll table that letter. Mr. Speaker, as well, the minister himself wrote a letter that I have here and I'll table commending the crosswalk flags, as he just did now. And Mr. Speaker, I would ask the minister why he is telling the residents that he supports the program, yet refusing to take the action that's necessary to improve visibility at crosswalks in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the member opposite for bringing this attention matter to my attention. And, of course, tabling the letter, which I'm looking forward to reading again from the good mayor of the Halifax Regional Municipality. I've heard before that the false sense of security that these flags provide seems to me something that I find contradictory. And I want to make it very clear to Mr. Collins, and I want to make it clear to the people who represent the HRM. The advice that I've received is that as the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal, I have certain responsibilities when it comes to overviewing the traffic authority with the HRM. That is a given. And if the particular gentleman who now currently is the, and I know his independent stance, and I know how important he is, the arm's length position that he has, I have been advised, and I take that advice from the people in my department, that I, as the minister responsible for provincial responsibilities and provincial roads, should not become involved in the quagmire of the bureaucracy involving the HRM and the traffic authority.
Oh, The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure whether the Minister just misunderstands the advice he's receiving from the Department or is getting bad advice, but at the end of the day, the Minister is aware that the Transportation Association of Canada has said that they cannot adopt these as a traffic control device for the very reason that the province has not yet endorsed them as a traffic control device, and the municipality has indicated quite openly they don't have the authority until the province takes action. So my question for the Minister is, will he support legislation that amends the Motor Vehicle Act, making crosswalk flags a traffic control device?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Mr. Speaker, I want to bring to the member from Dartmouth East's attention the fact that within the Department of Transportation, there are extremely professional people. And I know there's members sitting on that side of the House who recently were in the government, and I've spoken to them on a number of occasions about the reception that I have received from the people who work in the Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. At no time are you going to hear the proverbial thing that happens at HRM Council, well, we have a difficulty with staff. We have a difficulty with staff. They're not listening to us. I want that member to know that the staff at the Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal has my complete and full confidence. On this particular matter, I accept their advice. This is an issue that should be handled by the HRM. The Waverley Road is a street, a road that is responsibility of the HRM, and I encourage them to endorse this proposal.
The Honourable Member from Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, the NDP have failed Nova Scotians yet again on their election promise that they had a plan to stop ER closures. The truth is now out, and they don't have a plan, but they do have a consultant. Turns out that their plan is not to solve ER closures, but eliminate ERs in this province. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister unequivocally commit that all, not almost all, ERs in Nova Scotia will be protected rather than attacked by her or her so-called advisor?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I want to say that I'd be very surprised if the ER advisor, Dr. Ross, would attack emergency rooms in this province.
The Honourable Member from Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that's not what he alluded to in the media today, and that is not the facts that the Minister is trying to present to this House. Mr. Speaker, the government has hired yet another $100,000 consultant to work 2 days a week, a high-cost, part-time contract for a full-time, real-time problem. While the Minister's wallpapering over the problem is troubling to Nova Scotians, worse still is the hidden agenda of a minister and a government looking to have someone else do their dirty work for them. Mr. Speaker, will the minister finally come clean on her backroom strategy to close ERs?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, we hardly have a backroom strategy, Mr. Speaker. We ran an election campaign. We ran an election campaign on keeping ERs open and shortening wait times. That was a conversation with the people of this province for more than 30 days, Mr. Speaker, hardly in the back rooms. Mr. Speaker, on the fourth day of this session, we came here and we fulfilled a campaign promise to appoint an ER advisor, and we did that in the public of this chamber, Mr. Speaker. Hardly a secret strategy, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as we go forward to solve the mess that those guys left us, it will be very much an open process, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, an orange party with yet another orange alert to Nova Scotians, because it's alarming what they're doing, and the disgrace that this minister is talking about and the severity of the issue of facing Nova Scotians. Mr. Speaker, they made a promise. They now aren't delivering on it. And Mr. Speaker, I can tell you, the minister's words ring hollow with Nova Scotians who once thought sincerely the NDP would honour their promise. It now appears the minister has even Cape Breton hospitals in her sight. So, Mr. Speaker, my question is, will she commit to protecting the Northside General, the New Waterford Consolidated, and the Glace Bay General Hospital from her and apparently her Orange Code and Orange Warning Consultants acts?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Emergency room coverage in this province, from one end of this province to another, is a priority for this government, Mr. Speaker. And in the coming...
The Honourable Minister of Health has the floor.
In the coming...
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Health. Marcel Comeau from Matagan recently contacted my office with regard to the Caregiver Allowance Program. Her husband, Calix Thibodeau, has been providing care for Marcel, who has advanced muscular dystrophy for the last 12 years. Both Marcel and Calix were excited about the program. However, Mr. Speaker, they received their rejection letter yesterday. So my first question to the minister, can the minister please explain why an individual with advanced muscular dystrophy and their caregiver would not qualify for the caregiver allowance?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. I'd be pleased to answer it. Of course, I don't know the specifics of the case you refer to, but a person may, in fact, not qualify for this program if their income is higher than the income cutoffs, if they're not getting 20 hours of week of care per week, and if they, when they're assessed on a very standardized assessment tool that is used as we assess for home care, as we assess for long-term care, we are using the same tool with respect to the caregiver's allowance. If they don't meet a level 5 in terms of what their care requirements are, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I will tell you what she was told. She was told that because her cognitive behaviour is still functioning, she doesn't qualify. Marcel can't bathe herself. She can't drink from a glass on her own. She can't get out of the house. She can't open a door. In essence, she has a high level of disability. One of the key requirements in the news release this government sent out on August 11, 2009. So on the Maple scale, she scored 3 out of 5. So my question to the Minister of Health, what does an individual need to do in order to score a 5 and qualify for the Caregiver Allowance Program?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And again, I welcome the question because it gives me an opportunity to provide information to the members. Mr. Speaker, the MAPLE assessment is a standardized assessment tool that is used the world over to assess for long-term care, for home care, and for other services for people with disabilities or for seniors. It is a 5-stage assessment, Mr. Speaker, in terms of the level of care that one might require. And, Mr. Speaker, to qualify for the caregivers program, one has to have the highest level of care needs, which is a level 5 on the assessment tool. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, you either provide support and recognize the efforts of caregivers who are keeping individuals in their community for as long as possible, which is the very foundation of this program, or you put them in a costly facility. Worse yet, Mr. Speaker, what options would the province have if something happened to Marcel's caregiver? So my final question to the minister is, why have you raised the expectations of individuals with a high level of disability only to disappoint them with a rejection letter?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I really don't believe that this government raised anybody's expectations by fulfilling the commitment of a former government, which was advocated strongly for by the opposition. Mr. Speaker, we went forward with a program that people were expecting, which had been announced and which was in the former government's budget. And, Mr. Speaker, we recognize that this program has its limitations in terms of who it was designed to assist, Mr. Speaker, and we are certainly evaluating that as we go forward to fulfill our own campaign promise, which is to introduce a caregivers program next year. Mr. Speaker, if the Honourable Member would like to provide me with the details of the case that he referred to, I would be happy to have our department review it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Okay. The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health, and it deals again with continuing care allowance. Mr. Speaker, a constituent of mine in Victoria County, Joey Fraser, has heart disease, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, glaucoma, has had open heart surgery, his leg amputated below the knee, angina and cataracts, and is in need of care at his home. However, Mr. Speaker, applicants must be assessed a score of Maple 5, and they must have some combination of very poor memory, behavioral problems, risk of falls, or many challenges with managing their personal needs. Mr. Speaker, without a doubt, Mr. Fraser, as I previously mentioned, has trouble with managing his personal needs as he can't do his laundry, clean, or prepare any of his meals. My question to the Minister is, why would he be refused assistance under the caregiver allowance?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. And again, Mr. Speaker, I don't know the specifics of the case that the Honourable Member refers to, but, Mr. Speaker, it's important for people to understand that before this program was introduced, the former government had a pilot project in the Department of Community Services that piloted this program. It was called In-Home Support, Mr. Speaker, and it operated in two areas of the province, Mr. Speaker, and it had the same criteria for the province-wide program that government announced, with one difference, Mr. Speaker, and that difference was that people didn't have to be on a list for awaiting homes for special care, meaning that they had the highest level of care requirements. There have been no changes in this program with respect to the criteria, except we have taken that one small barrier away. And, Mr. Speaker, if people are feeling that they are improperly assessed, we will certainly have a look at that in the department. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria of the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Fraser's daughter is distraught to know her father can't access this allowance. She even told me the other day, can't the government understand that caregivers are saving the health care system money? The Premier talked between May 5th and June 9th throughout the election campaign about the importance of seniors being able to stay in their homes. My question, Mr. Speaker, is, will Mr. Fraser be able to get this caregiver's allowance and stay in his own home where he is the most comfortable?
The Honourable the Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, that's precisely why this government had as part of its platform, a caregiver's allowance program, which we intend to bring forward in next year. And, Mr. Speaker, I assure you it will not be the flawed program that was designed by the former government and with the assistance of the opposition party.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through you to the Minister, next year may be too late for Mr. Fraser. My question is, am I to take from everything you said in your answers both now and to other members that if I have Mr. Fraser's daughter called your office, that you will immediately look into this troubling situation?
The Honourable the Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, what I have said, and I will say clearly to the member through you, Mr. Speaker, is that if he has a constituent who feels they were improperly assessed and he wants to bring that to my attention, we will have it reviewed in the department. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Mr. Speaker, my question again is for the Minister of Health. Mr. Speaker, clearly there are many people that have problems and see the limitations in this caregiver program, which has been announced. The Minister herself has said today that she recognizes there were limitations. She's used the word flawed program, and yet she herself rolled it out and allowed it to be introduced. Mr. Speaker, in my constituency, I have a constituent whose name is Thelma Purcell. And she was very excited when she watched Live at 5 and saw the government's program discussed and introduced. She thought finally somebody recognized her commitment to looking after her husband, which she's been doing for 9 years on a 24-hour-a-day basis. She was excited, and she gave accolades to the government for doing just that. Now we hear it's not really their program. It's something else that they're not willing to take responsibility for. But, Mr. Speaker, I want to go back to my first question to the minister, and that was when I asked her if she would table for us today the exact number of applicants that there have been to this program and how many, more importantly, how many have qualified to date.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. The Honourable Member will know that the continuing care has been devolved into the DHAs. And so the applications are coming through the DHAs and the assessments are being done in the DHAs. And so to provide the Honourable Member with the information that she requested would mean that we would have to talk to the DHAs to get the up-to-date information for today. So I can't make that commitment at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker. But what I can say is that I do know that we had a tremendous number of applications for this program. And in fact, the people in the department were very interested in seeing and understanding the need that's out there in the community, Mr. Speaker. It gives us a way to quantify just how many people are caring for people that we didn't know about before, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, in the case of my constituent, Thelma is looking after her husband, who has been insulin dependent for many years. He's wheelchair bound. He suffers from coronary artery disease. He has no use of the right side, including his arm and hand. Mr. Speaker, this is an individual who, without 24-hour care, would be in an institution, without a doubt. He would be costing far more for our system than the $400 a month that was offered or is supposed to be offered through this program. On August 12th, the minister, again in the press release, said that people in the province are looking for help now. And she took that dramatic step of announcing the program, putting it back on the website, bringing it to the attention of the public, particularly with a lot of PR. There was a PR overdrive to bring people to the awareness of this. And I would like to ask the minister if she did not consider in her rollout of this program just how severely disabled people are who are at level 3, and obviously that there would be a large number of people who would be left off and disappointed.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Surely the Honourable Member isn't suggesting that when this program was put in place that we provide no announcements about it, Mr. Speaker. How in the world would anybody know that there was a program if we didn't issue a press release, which is what we did, Mr. Speaker. We didn't hold any big dramatic rollout. We issued a press release. We said this program is now here. The information was on the website, and I think I did an interview with the Chronicle Herald and perhaps with Information Morning in Cape Breton, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's important today in the House, after the number of questions we've had to the Minister about this program, that we ask again that she undertake to provide to the House as soon as possible the answer on the number of people who have applied for this program and the number that she can verify that have been qualified to accept this program. I think that's very important that that question be asked one more time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to tell the Honourable Member and all members who are concerned about their constituents and their constituents getting the services that they need that we will look very closely at this program. We will learn from this program in terms of what its limitations are as we design the program for next year. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, to put it bluntly, the cattle producers are faced with a crisis. With a faltering economy, heavy competition from producers, other provinces and states, high fuel costs and overall low profit ratios, many cattle farmers are faced with the real threat of shutting down their operations. Yet in the face of all this uncertainty, the Agriculture Minister has chosen not to live up to his word. Where the previous government's commitment of $2 million in short-term sustainable funding. My question is, Mr. Speaker, why has this government and this minister turned its back on the cattle producers of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Very pleased to be able to answer this question for the member opposite. The reaction I've received from the cattle producers certainly isn't that I've turned their back on them. They seem to be quite positive, and quite positive with the government, and quite positive with this minister. And actually, Mr. Speaker, I met with them several times, and the president of the cattle producers, he and I have agreed to dialogue once a month to just stay updated on issues. As far as the previous government's commitment, there was none. Matter of fact, if the member opposite can identify where this letter signed by the former minister was typed and sent out from, because it didn't come from this Department of Agriculture that when he was the minister, nobody in the department knows where it was generated. So Mr. Speaker, so I guess when almost every member who was in the government side of the previous government was a cabinet minister, they could run around the province during a campaign, make outlandish statements, and then that meant that they were all promises by the previous government.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the aftermath of this careless about face by this government, why should the men and women of the Nova Scotia cattle producers in this province and their association believe what the government says and trust anything while they're not sharpening their pencils and writing the support that these people need to keep going and keep their operations alive?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Mr. Speaker, it may take some time for cattle producers, the agricultural industry, and Nova Scotians in general to feel that they can endorse and support any comments by this government. And when we deliver on our promises, they'll see that. But I want to tell the member opposite that I have made a commitment to cattle producers to see what is possible to do for them. My staff has been working on a plan for them for short-term funding, and it's I'm hopeful actually in the next few days to be able to make some statement in that regard, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final
supplementary. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's clear that without action and leadership from this government, which we're not seeing to date, that time may soon run out for the farmers in this province, the men and women who are working hard to support us all. What's the government's plan to help support the cattle producers of this province? Time to tell us the story, Mr. Minister.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We think we do have the parts of a plan just about finalized. I've had some initial discussion with the cattle producers. It will not be a cockamamie plan like the previous government had shown to cattle producers. It'll be something that will actually have some impact for them. And I'm looking forward in the next short term to be able to announce something for cattle producers, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. The Keep the Heat program has helped many low-income families struggling to pay their heating bills over the years. As the cold weather approaches, and I think all members are must know by now that although it's warm outside during the day, it's already cold at night, Nova Scotians are asking whether this program will be available. My question for the Minister is, what are his plans for the Keep the Heat program?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. I have the pleasure of working closely with the people in the Conserve Nova Scotia and Energy Department, of course, when it comes to various programs. And some of those programs have had a wonderful response from Nova Scotians. We monitor the response that we get, the interest that's there. Of course, there's a budgetary-type decision, some of the very things that the member opposite should pay attention to tomorrow, when he will be made more fully aware of decisions that are based upon the fact there is a need, but there's also a need to make sure that we live within our means. Some of these programs are under review at this time, and I encourage the member opposite tomorrow during the budget to pay particular attention to some of these issues.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Minister can be rest assured that I'll be paying attention to that part of the budget tomorrow. His remarks there sounded a bit like code, that they'll be cutting that program. So is the Minister suggesting that they are going to cut or reduce support for low-income families in Nova Scotia who need to fill their oil tank this winter?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
I'd like to point out to the member opposite that this particular member has never spoken in code. We spoke clearly and respond to the issues and the questions that are answered. The question was asked whether these programs are under review. And you know, Mr. Speaker, I want you to know, and you know from your constituency, members opposite know, members of my caucus are aware of the fact that there are many programs which I have the responsibility for that have a huge response from Nova Scotians. And I want the member opposite to know that when it comes to the reviewing of programs, those programs will be based upon need, but they'll also be based upon the fact there are programs that this government continue to support, continue to fit within our budget. I'm looking forward to those comments and that discussion tomorrow after budget.
The Honourable Member from Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Prior to the election, the previous government had announced that individuals with an income level below $27,000 or below and families with an income level below $42,000 would qualify for a rebate for oil of up to $200. Low-income families are depending on this, and they're looking to fill their oil tanks very quickly. Mr. Minister, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister, will these same individuals and families qualify under the program which will be in the budget tomorrow, and does the government plan to expand it so that low-income families still don't have to struggle quite as much to fill their oil tanks this winter?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
I want the member from Dartmouth East to be reassured of the fact that I hear from numerous members of my caucus constantly in taking care of low-income Nova Scotians. This party and this government has always been there in terms of advocating on behalf of them, and this party and this government will not forget those folks when it comes to making these tough decisions. I think it's important. If I may continue, Mr. Speaker, I think also that during estimates debates, when we have the time to review each of these programs and to look to the ones that have had the most success, it will be an interesting time for the member opposite to basically get his facts straight.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Environment, through you, naturally, Mr. Speaker. In early September, the Minister of Environment and Fisheries and the Minister of Agriculture met with concerned citizens from the Yarmouth area about a potential new mink ranch near Sloan's Lake. And, Mr. Speaker, if I may, I invited both ministers to a public meeting earlier in August, and they both declined to come. But I tell you, Mr. Speaker, I have repeatedly asked for a moratorium on any future fur farming license in the Yarmouth area, until at least an environmental review is completed. Will this be done? Mr. Speaker, the residents of the local area, like myself, are on the record, and I will table this newspaper clipping asking for a moratorium until the review is completed. And, Mr. Speaker, if I may, both ministers, through the local media, both ministers characterized the meeting as positive, and they believe that they are on the path to resolving the residents' concerns. Some residents, later on in the article,
you have a question,
some residents
member?
Didn't feel as positive about the meeting, Mr. Speaker, about the ultimate goal for a moratorium in the Yarmouth area, Mr. Speaker.
Question, please.
My question is, will this be done, and if not, why?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. First of all, the member opposite needs to get his facts straight. The member opposite asked for a meeting, and we proceeded and we met with the residents of Batagan, the Yarmouth area, and also the Clyde River area. I also met with the member opposite, and I also want to tell you a little background, Mr. Speaker. I spent 38 years on the water. I know the importance of water quality, and that's the first thing I've done as a minister to ensure that we have a stronger monitoring program on the Carleton watershed. I also spent 9 years and municipal government, Mr. Speaker, and I understand that the authority lies with municipal government. I spent 9 years on the opposite benches, and I observed the member opposite, who spent 11 years at the municipal level and spent 10 years in the government. I can assure you, Mr. Minister, that we have spent more on this particular topic in the 100 days that we have addressed this issue than the member opposite has done in the last...
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I can tell you, and I can tell all members of this House, that if there's a public meeting in my community, I will be there. And I have the backbone to stand up and support the people in my community, not like the two ministers that did not come to a public meeting that were requested personally by me to come to that meeting. If they want to have backroom meetings, they can go ahead and have them, Mr. Speaker. The citizens of my community are very concerned about the environment. And I'm going to ask the minister... You told the Yarmouth Vanguard that legislations and regulations concerning fur-bearing animals will not be enacted until at least next spring. If so, the new mink ranch, if it is constructed at Sloan's Lake, can you guarantee the residents of the area today
that they will not have to be concerned about the blue-green algae entering the spring-fed Sloan's Lake.
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I just want to point out that the blue-green algae, we have a number of them across the province as we speak. It's a natural occurrence. And I also want to point out that the member opposite had 21 years, 11 years at the municipal level. He had 10 years in the government to deal with this issue. And I'm going to tell you that we have been in government for less than 100 days, and we have addressed this issue, and we met with the people. Thank you very much.
Order. Order, please. I'll recognize the Honourable Member from Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I guess lip service is what this government will be given. The people has asked for a short-term moratorium until this environmental study has been completed. That minister, a former warden for the Barrington area, the people of the Barrington area still have concern about the mink ranch and his home riding, that he will not address the concerns of the people. Well, I will stand up and I will talk to the people of Barrington and I will let them know, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to ask the member one more time. Will he stand in this place and tell the people of Yarmouth and the Barrington area that he will put a moratorium on until the environmental study has been completed? Yes or no, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Again, Mr. Speaker, I welcome the opportunity, and I assure the members to this member opposite has spent 21 years, had an opportunity to deal with this issue, has never, and we have dealt with this issue, and I ask you to defer this question to the Minister of Agriculture, Mr. Ferguson.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Quickly. No, you may sit down. I'll recognize the Honourable Member of Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This keeps up. There'll be no time for me, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, these days the people of Cape Breton are angry. In particular, the people of Cape Breton Regional Municipality. They face many challenges: declining population, higher taxes, fewer services. And Mr. Speaker, they're facing them alone. They've had no help from this government to date. According to CBRM, they have been underfunded by the province to the tune of $20 million a year in equalization payments. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is that true? Is it true that the province is giving a better deal to some municipalities, but not even a fair deal to the Cape Breton Regional Municipality?
Order. I'll recognize the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for that question. There has been a commitment made by our government that we will be reviewing equalization with the municipalities and keeping in mind the context of being fiscally responsible. So we are going to be reviewing that.
I'll recognize the Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure if that minister even knows where Cape Breton is right now. So what I'm going to do, Mr. Speaker, is ask my next question to the Premier. And the Premier has expressed some sympathy towards the people of CBRM on this matter, but the words are a little empty. CBRM has tried to appeal this inequality, but the NDP government, this government that ran a campaign on fairness, asked the Supreme Court to reject that very appeal. Mr. Speaker, the government owes it to the people of CBRM, stop talking and start doing something. So my question for the Premier is, when is he or his minister going to sit down with CBRM and discuss a fair distribution of equalization payments?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm happy to reply to the member for Glace Bay. I I look forward to the opportunity to meet with the mayor and council at the CBRM. I, of course, know that the proposal that they put forward was through the UNSM. I think it's important that we respect the UNSM as the voice for municipalities, and we certainly intend to pursue this matter along with the study that the UNSM did with them. Thank you.
The Honourable Member from Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's, I think, at the stage where hollow words don't cut it anymore, Mr. Speaker, because the people of Cape Breton deserve a fair deal. They certainly aren't getting one right now. The Premier, Mr. Speaker, has, just sitting on his left right there, the self-appointed political minister of Cape Breton. Mr. Speaker, that very minister last night on CTV said that he knows, as a former negotiator, that at the end of the trail in negotiations, there's always a yes. So, Mr. Speaker, I'm asking the Premier, why don't you put your political minister on the next bus to Cape Breton and deliver that yes to the CBRM and the mayor and councillors?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The member for Glace Bay should know that we intend to treat the municipalities in this province with respect. We intend to negotiate with them on the basis of the fact that they deliver many services that are important to the people of the province. We certainly understand that. We also understand that there are concerns around the question of equalization that was set out in the paper, that the report that came forward through the UNSM. We think it's appropriate to deal with them in that fashion, and that's what we're going to do.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question for you is to the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, the Minister knows that the province's Boots the Street program has produced great outcomes at community and provincial levels, with 150 officers in place and 35 more committed for this year. Communities are concerned about the current status of this government's commitment, and especially the 10 positions in Cape Breton and 2 positions in New Glasgow. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is simple. Does he intend to keep the commitments to these communities and provide the 12 committed positions?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for that question. It's a long afternoon sitting here, and I'm glad to have at least one question. So I look forward. Thank you. The issue of police officers' boots in the streets has been a successful program, and as a former police officer, I enjoyed the pleasure of having those extra positions. The budget's coming out tomorrow. We'll wait to see what's read in there. As for the police officers in Cape Breton, we're presently at 197 per 100,000, which is above the national average. So there's plenty of boots on the street, but we will see what the future holds.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And that was a very much a no from the Minister, and it's of great concern to the people of Cape Breton. When 10 positions were committed for the community, 7 to the Cape Breton Regional Police Service, 3 for a Safer Streets and Communities Investigative Unit, of which furniture was bought, the RCMP selected the location, and if this Minister is waffling on that, and the 2 for his own community of New Glasgow, which included both Aboriginal liaison and youth policing, then these communities would be very concerned. I would like to point out to the Minister, as he would know, of the acute problems that have been in our area, the need for additional investigative policing, drugs policing, ports policing, mental health policing. And, Mr. Speaker, if he walks away from that, there will be a lot of discourse in the community, and he'll be walking away from his own peers he used to work with. Mr. Speaker, will that Minister stand on his pins in this House and commit to honour the commitment to the policing of the 12 positions for Cape Breton as well as for New Glasgow?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you for the question. I am committed to policing. It's been my lifelong commitment, and for my professional career, I will continue to look at the needs of Nova Scotians, the needs of police officers and the community as a whole, and this government will commit to putting resources that are strategically focused to meet the needs of all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, as the Minister knows, when we were faced with the fiscal realities, it was 50 for this current year. We had reduced that to 35. Of that, 10 were for Cape Breton, an investigative office. What he now also knows is that the Cape Breton Regional Municipality hired those police officers, New Glasgow hired those police officers on that commitment. And, Mr. Speaker, yes, the question is being called. The Deputy Premier knows in the community the concerns that are there. And, Mr. Speaker, the real question is, will the Minister of Justice honour the commitment to these communities and give them the police they not only deserve, they need, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Well, having the pleasure to be the Minister of Justice for the last 95 days, I've had the 96, and the nice thing is I had the pleasure and the opportunity to meet with all the chiefs of Nova Scotia and the RCMP and get a good, clear picture of what the needs and the priorities of this province are. And we are looking forward to the budget being settled tomorrow so that we can put the needs of Nova Scotia first and ensure the benefits to all taxpayers and the benefits of all people in the Cape Breton region, that they get the best quality care.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Natural Resources. Mr. Speaker, in early September, the Minister of Energy granted an exploration license to East Rock Resources Limited for an area that includes the Chignecto Game Sanctuary. Mr. Speaker, this is invasive activity into a region that is currently being evaluated as a possible protected area. My question to the Minister, why did your government agree to this exploration license?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, I have to say that the Department of Energy gave the exploration license, not Department of Natural Resources. We expect to get an application around seismic testing, whatever. That hasn't come yet. But it's our hope that in order to make informed decisions, that we actually know what our resources are.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, a public review of the province's game sanctuaries released in 2005 found most respondents wanted more protection for game sanctuaries. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to read a quote from the good member for Pictou West when he was in opposition from the fall of 2008. Why won't the minister listen to the results of his own department's consultation? My question to the minister, will you listen to the results of your department's consultations and offer protection for the Chignecto Game Sanctuary?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Look, I have to try to reassure, I think, the member opposite. The ecological possibilities of the Chignecto Game Sanctuary are important to the government. The Colin Stewart Forest Forum has identified part of this area as possible wilderness area. So I want the member to know that if it's possible that that it can go through that process to become designated as wilderness area or some parts of it, we'd be very, very interested in that. We're committed to meeting our 12% protected areas. So we'll follow this process along, and we'll monitor and put our regulations or desires in place on any license that request that comes to us in order to ensure that the areas that we deem to be the most sensitive are not impacted by anything that might happen at this point there.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do find some degree of comfort in that response from the Minister. However, I will proceed from this line. Mr. Speaker, last year the previous government allowed East Rock to perform seismic testing in Chignecto, which was opposed by the NDP. Now the same company has been given permission to explore for oil and gas. This is another example of the NDP saying one thing, clearly doing another. They are neglecting their responsibilities as government, moving painfully slow toward the province's goal of meeting 12% protected area by 2015. My question to the minister, will your government offer full protection for Chignecto immediately?
The Honourable Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure what the member means by full protection, but if he's thinking about protection of a wilderness area, he would know that that couldn't happen immediately. There is a process to do that, but we're interested in that property and what it can offer Nova Scotians. And so we'll certainly be monitoring what happens there. We don't want to see anything that negatively impacts the significant features in that area.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is for the Minister of Fisheries. Mr. Speaker, the past season saw lobster prices at a near record low level. And at every step along the way, the NDP were there to criticize the previous government. They were there to promise the fishermen the moon. Yet since the government took power, all they have done is remove the $40 fee for the permit. The permit's still in place, and that minister said it should be removed. The fee is there. Roadside vendors still have to pay, get a permit. Hardly a game changer, if you ask me, Mr. Speaker. Now, my question to the minister is this. When will this government finally put it in words, his words, into action and come through with the promises that you have made to the fishermen of this province? It's time for that minister to fish or cut bait.
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I can make one promise as I stand in this historical house. I'm here to represent fishermen in the coastal communities of Nova Scotia. And we have addressed the issue of the vendor's permit, something that the member opposite introduced, and we removed that fee, Mr. Speaker. I look forward to dealing with all the fisheries issues, and I'll bring that forward.
Order. Time for oral questions has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television.